Hello all, and welcome into another episode of the Poetry Tavern. I'm your host as always, Charlotte, and this week we're talking to a lovely chap by the name of Ross Wilcock, who is a Glasgow-based poet who focuses on disability and queerness, and is really prevalent sort of like in the poetry scene in Glasgow. So let's just like get into it before I waffle on too much and distract from the interview.
Hey, well, welcome into the Poetry Tavern, Ross.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's lovely to have you. Why don't we start, you just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, so my name's Ross. I'm a Glasgow-based queer disabled poet. I've been writing for about a decade now, and I recently just graduated from the University of Glasgow with a Master's in Creative Writing, which is very, very exciting to have. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, you've been writing for about a decade. What started you off writing? How did you sort of get into writing?
I have always loved writing, even back in school. And I think what really kind of re-energized my love for it was just kind of having a place to vent, I guess. It's kind of how it started. And I originally actually wanted to be a songwriter. But what kind of happened was my song, when I tried to write songs, they come out more poetic-wise, or like lyrical, I guess like lyrical poetry, I guess. And just one day I was like, you know what, I'm just going to read this out at an open mic and the rest is history, you know. And yeah, so yeah, that's kind of how it all kind of happened.
What do you think for you was the thing in the lyrics you were trying to write that sort of tipped you off, that it's like, oh, this is a bit more poetic than perhaps normal songs, like, or traditional songs are?
I think it was just that, like, I kind of found myself writing more poetically, I guess. I think that I just kind of realised that it wasn't really about it being songs, it was just more about what the message of the writing was. And I found that it might have been more powerful and more meaningful in poetry. So I kind of started writing about my lived experiences in poetry form.
So you've talked about sort of like poetry as a sort of form of venting or self-expression. You run, like, I think it's 2 open mics a month?
Yeah.
Do you think there's something important about those spaces sort of existing for poets and even just people to come and, like, share?
Yeah, you know, I've always really been very very much about safe space. What is said in this space kind of stays in that space, you know. And yeah. I've had a lot of people, I'm very lucky that a lot of people have actually come to me and expressed how welcomed they felt in those spaces, and how valuable those spaces are for people, especially for those who have maybe never read before, those people who have maybe read poems or read work, because it's not just poetry, it's like all forms of writing, like that maybe read stuff that they had never intended on reading, but like the way that they felt so much strength from it. So I think those spaces are so incredibly important to have. So yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, from my own personal experience writing poetry, you can sort of write it to yourself and that feels good, but then once you share it with other people, it becomes like its own.
And I'm a big believer in it's like one action is like the writing of it, but then the next action is like saying it out loud, and it kind of takes it into the universe and sort of takes a little bit of that stress off of you, I guess. But like you're putting it out there, and it kind of makes it feel like, you know, because you never know, sometimes your work could resonate with someone else, and you know, and you could be helping someone else without actually knowing it. And I think that's the beautiful thing about not just poetry, but all writing. So yeah.
I think that is something that I felt when I was younger, that like when I started writing, part of my inspiration was, I read this thing that made me feel really seen. I want to do that for someone else.
Yes, I think that's very much how I feel as well. I feel like I grew up not really reading many points of view from someone that was queer and disabled. Maybe queer, yes, and maybe disabled, yes, but never at the same time. So, yeah. And I kind of felt like if I could help one person, it doesn't matter if it's a million people, if I could even help one person, like, I feel like that's kind of like my job done, you know, and yeah.
Do you think you've achieved that yet? You've helped at least one person?
I hope so. I really hope so. That is one of my goals. That I hope. But I know that running the open mics have helped a lot of people. I know that for definite, because I've been told that, and that's something that I hold very dear to me, and it's something that I think is why I keep doing it, is that I know it helps people. And it helps me as well. It helps me as well, obviously. So yeah.
So you talked a little bit about, like, you're a queer disabled, like, Scottish poet, and it says so on a couple of, like, your socials and your website. You also describe yourself as an activist. Do you think any of these elements inspire what you write about? I mean, obviously you've talked about representation, but do you think it inspires you in other ways, like it informs your perspective when you write?
Yes, definitely. I think that I'm an activist in the terms of, like, disabled rights and the rights of, but not just disabled rights, but, like, accessibility and I think that because of the perspective that I have lived in my life, being queer and disabled and being disabled since birth as well, I do think that I've got a lot of sympathy and empathy for other marginalised groups, and I hope everyone does. Like, you shouldn't have to be a marginalised group to feel for others, but I do think that there is a big element of that in it, you know, like, and I feel like I'm someone that feels a lot of empathy for other marginalised groups and community and communities and things like that. And I think that my writing, I hope, really expresses that. And I guess all you can really do is write your own lived experience and write your own life experience. And really, I just write about what I see, not just about myself, but what I see around me. Especially from, like, a Scottish lens, where, not to get political, but kind of the Scottish lens coming from a country that's ran by another country. You don't want to get too political. But so, like, there's kind of that side of it as well, and sort of there's certain elements that I write about and frustration about how some of my rights as a disabled person aren't fully ruled by Scotland. It's like the English government, and because of that, there's some like frustration there. So I write about that, or especially more recently, I've written about the kind of political landscape around the LGBT community and around the disabled community.
It's not been the best it's ever been recently.
I know, exactly. Sometimes I feel a little bit, like, touchy talking about political stuff, because I know it's not, you know, but it is important as well. But
I think, like, one of the things about poetry is it's about talking about things that frustrate you sometimes. So I definitely think there's a lot of good political poetry out there. So, like, no worries about talking about it on here. For a more light-hearted question, probably just for me, I lived in Glasgow for 4 years.
Oh, wow.
Not very long. I was at uni in Glasgow and I lived there the whole time. What is your favourite part of living in Glasgow or being in Glasgow?
I'm Glasgow born and raised. And I'm surprised I haven't crossed paths, because I've lived in Glasgow my entire life. I think what I love about Glasgow is the community aspect. We are very chatty people, well, at least the people that I know. And it's like, what I love is that you can sit down at a pub and meet Thai people who then become your friends, you know. And I kind of love that sort of community aspect of Glasgow, and that yeah, and that, you know, no matter where you're from, everyone sort of like, you're kind of, you're like you're Glaswegian or you're Scottish, you know, from the minute. Yeah. So I think
I mean there is that big building that just says people make Glasgow.
Exactly. that's what I love about Glasgow, is that we are very much true to that phrase, like, people make Glasgow. And I think, yeah, I'm very proud to be Scottish, but I think more so Glaswegian, because I think we're very accepting of, or for the most part, and most of us are very accepting of everyone and anyone, no matter where you come from, and we always kind of are like, if you want to be Scottish, you're Scottish, kind of thing, you know. And I love that about Glasgow. So yeah.
Okay, cool. Would you like to read one of your own poems for us today?
Yes, I would. Sorry, I've taken a sip of water there.
No, you're all good. I've been drinking coffee this whole time, so.
Okay. Yes, I will read one of my poems. I would love to. I will read, you know what, I'll read one of my, I like to call it greatest hits, and I'm like, who do I think I am? But it's like, it's only because I read this one at like almost every gig that I have ever performed at, because it's one of my personal favourites, and it's called Twisted Tales. I write a lot about like kind of folklore and fairy tale and sort of, that kind of whole folklore. I think especially being Scottish, there's like a kind of, we've got a bit of a history with folklore and legend and things like that. I wrote this poem just kind of about the feeling of wanting to find a happily ever after. So this is called Twisted Tales. Fairy tales told me that all my dreams would come true, that I would live happily ever after with my Prince Charming. So I'd watch as a glass slipper reunited two lovers. Seven little men had a princess from her evil stepmother, so that a prince on a white horse could save her. And I got tales of an underwater kingdom where love would win. But in reality, fairy tales are just that. They're tales to help us dream at night. Cinderella is just a fable passed down from generation to generation. It's not real. Snow White was a twisted story formed in minds of the Brothers Grimm, and that beautiful film that Disney made about the red-haired mermaid, it's actually a tragedy. Where a young woman sacrifices herself for the man she loves. In reality, love doesn't come knocking at your door, doesn't hand your magic lamp with three wishes. You can't just go and buy some magic bean that erupts into a beanstalk that leads to lands of magic. Love is a raw, real, timeless emotion. It's not for playing with or manipulating, but that's what it's become. And I have loved, but I've never been loved, at least not in the way I know I deserve to be. I just hope that I find it before that last rose petal falls. Thank you.
that was great. What is it about that poem that like makes it one of your all-time favorites?
I think it's just one of the ones that, like, I think that everyone sort of knows those stories and knows those sorts of tropes in it. And I think that I kind of grew up very much thinking, oh, that's who love is. I'm going to meet Prince Charming and fall in love and, you know, be whisked away into the sunset. But it's like, actually, no, especially in gay culture, it's definitely not like that. And I think that I've kind of had a lot of failed love. And like, even though I've had some like pretty bad experiences, I've never really given up on love. And I think that's kind of what the message of that poem is that even if I have had bad experience after bad experience, I am a hopeless romantic, and I think that I've never really, and I never will, hopefully, give up on love, you know. So yeah.
Do you think that, I mean, you've talked about, you've performed it several times.
Yeah.
Do you think it's like a crowd favourite as well? Is it something that like other people seem to enjoy.
Yeah, as again, because it's that familiar, there's a universal kind of recognition of like those stories, like no matter where you're from, there's like a version of Cinderella that you'll know, a version of Snow White that you'll know, whether it's Disney or whether it's like the actual real original story or some kind of abbreviation of the story. Yeah. And I think that's kind of why, and I also think that everyone has had those kind of failed relationships that you thought was going to be your happily ever after, but it's not. And I think that, like, also, like, with the ending being so sort of like that sort of don't ever give up on love kind of thing, I think that's why a lot of people like it, because it's kind of, it ends hopeful.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Have you got a poem that inspires you from someone else?
I do. I don't know if I can find it or not. Let me see if I can. I do have a poem by Edwin Morgan, who I absolutely adore. He's one of my favourite Scottish poets, and he is queer as well. I have found it. So should I read that one, or will I?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Let me just find it. Okay, this is one of my favourite poems by Edwin Morgan. It's called Strawberries. There were never strawberries like the ones we had that sultry afternoon, sitting on the step of the open French window, facing each other. Your knees held in mine, the blue plates in our laps, the strawberries glistening in the hot sunlight. We dipped them in sugar, looking at each other, not hurrying the feast for one to come, the empty plates laid on the stone together, with the two forks crossed, and I bent towards you, sweet in that air, and my arms abandoned like a child from your eager mouth to taste of strawberries, and my memory, lean back again, let me love you, let the sun, beat on your forgetfulness, 1 hour of all the heat intense, and the summer lightning on the Kilpatrick Hills. Let the storm wash the plates. Yeah.
Oh, that one's so good.
I know.
It's so lovely and sweet and like just
very summery. I love it. I love Edwin Walker. I think he's one of those writers that really inspired me to like be so queer in my poetry, and I love it. But also the way that he describes things, there's like a story and you can really visually see it in your head, and that's what I love. Yeah. And that's what I want to do in my poetry as well, is like really allow the audience or the listener or the reader to really picture it in their head. So yeah.
Okay, well, just before we will be on our way, do you have anything coming up that you'd like to talk about to our listeners?
Yes, I do. I have a Fringe show, my second Fringe show. I debuted my first Fringe show, which was called Gay Disabled Vegan, last year at PBH Free Fringe. This year, I am taking a step into the world of love once again with Love in All Its Colours, which is debuting on the 22nd of August at Whistle Binkies in Edinburgh. It's going to be running until the 30th of August. It's free, no tickets to turn up. It's going to be at 1:45 p.m. for about an hour. I'll be there obviously after it to have a chat and yeah, things like that. And I'm very excited for this year. It's my second year in a row, and I'm really grateful to be part of the Free Fringe again.
Okay, well, thank you so much for coming on today, Ross.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of our episode. I appreciate everyone coming along for the ride. It was really lovely talking to Ross. All the links and the names of the poems will be in the episode description, as well as a link to his Fringe show. So if you're in the Edinburgh for the Fringe, please go along and support and tell him I sent you. So anyway, I'll see you next episode when we talk to Joel O'Connor.